Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
And a very good afternoon to you if you have just been locked in into Radio Pulpit. I did say, if you have a keen interest on marriage, if you're married, if you feel like, ish, I'm not too sure where this is going, and look, I don't know if there's a future in this, trust me, there is hope. Because this afternoon in studio, I am joined by Dr. Marilyn C. Saunders. And whoo, man, I had the privilege of just having a chat with her off air. And I feel like she's going to sound like a broken cassette for herself because she's about to repeat a lot of our conversations on air. Now, Dr. Marilyn is actually an author of a book titled Build to Last, a marriage blueprint, that is. And Build to Last is culturally grounded, psychologically informed guide to restoring and strengthening modern marriages, written by Dr. Marilyn C. Saunders herself, like I said, a seasoned psychologist, a relationship strategist, and a marriage counselor with nearly two decades of professional experience and over 40 years of personal marital wisdom. Now, this book offers couples a structured, practical approach to navigating the complexities of love, conflict, commitment, and healing. And I don't want to go on and on and on because I don't want to take the words out of her mouth, and I want us to get a feel of who she really is. So, Dr. Marilyn, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Luca, and thank you so much for inviting me.
I feel privileged. I'm really excited to have you in, I must say. We are living in a time and in a generation where marriage seems like just an idea.
Yes.
You know, a time where I don't think it's as sacred as it used to be. You know, when we grew up, we knew it was quite a sacred institution as well, one to be honored by both those who enter it.
Absolutely. And yeah. Supposed to be such a safe place.
Exactly.
A place of love, reassurance, understanding, and knowing that someone's got your back.
True, true.
And God, that was God's intention.
From the very
beginning. His love for us is that the husband needs to love the wife as Christ died for the church. That's love.
That's selfless love.
That's selfless love. Mm. And really to accept your wife unconditionally.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus accepts us unconditionally.
True.
So if we marry someone, be careful that you can marry her unconditionally with flaws.
True.
With flaws.
True.
And you know, a lot of conflict happens because of the modern couple, the modern marriage.
Mm.
20, 30 years ago in my time, it was easy, traditional.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is what the woman does. This is a job. This is a role. She stays at home. She keeps the kids happy.
Mm.
And the husband's happy, clean. And she does everything concerning family and home.
Mm. Mm.
But today, women have to go out and work because of the standard of living and what society is expecting from couples.
Mm. And so there are a lot of adjustments, I can imagine, that need to happen from both parties.
And the wife has to... Now with the BEEE, obviously, so she's in management and she's an exec, and she comes home and she has to take responsibility for all those things that the traditional wife was.
And she's suddenly not the boss that she is in the corporate space.
In the corporate space. And I think that the understanding that, so where the conflict happens is that the expectations are not met.
Mm.
So usually the man will be traditional, but he doesn't tell his wife. Often I would see couples married for 5 or 6 years, and I would tell the wife, are you listening to him? He's a traditional man.
Yeah.
No, he's not traditional. I said, listen to just what he said now.
That depicts a traditional man.
He's a traditional man.
Sure.
And you are a modern woman. And that is where the conflict is happening.
Mm.
And so before you even restore your marriage or build your marriage, it's important to define your marriage.
Oh, what type of it?
What type of marriage is it? Cultural? Is it modern? Then the other would also be, and that's my part one for preparation.
Mm.
Do you want me to get into the book first?
Let's start with you. I want you first. I want to understand you. And I always say, I remember at my wedding, my pastor's quite tiny in body. Mm. And he starts the wedding off. And obviously, I come from a traditional background. My parents are quite rural and family. They're looking at him. And I think he kind of sensed the room. And he made mention of the fact that he had been married for 17 years. He says, "Don't look at this tiny young boy standing in front of you. I've been married for 17 years and what I've learned." And I kid you not, Dr. Marilyn, that commanded a certain sense of respect immediately.
Mm.
You could now suddenly see people more receptive as well. So, but I want to know, you've been married for 40 years.
Yes.
I think let's go back to who you are, first of all, because I understand you're married. Maybe take us back to where, you know, who you are basically and your journey to being this counselor, actually, because I know we're Christians.
Yes.
Some are just, you know, I remember Dr. Julius, one of our contributors, who's a legal expert as well, says, "No, I do offer marriage counseling, but just disclaimer, I'm not a professional counselor." So I don't want those disclaimers here.
Yes. Yeah, I think the desire to be a marriage counselor probably stems from your childhood trauma. My mom and dad were young when they got married those years, and they had no communication skills, they had no role models. My mom's dad passed when she was a baby, and her mom didn't raise her. My dad's mom passed when he was young in primary school.
Yo.
And shortly after that, his dad died as well.
So they had picture of marriage.
And they got married about 18 years, when they were 16 or 18 years.
Sure.
So they had no clue about marriage. They had no role models.
Sure.
And no one was, you know, people say marry, but they don't teach you how or what
exactly
to do. And so.
And how to navigate this institution.
Navigate. And my dad got into drinking and domestic violence in the home. He was beating her often, and there was conflict, and I was the baby.
Sure.
So being the baby's on the lap and on the leg.
You're in the middle of these conflicts.
And I remember saying, "Dad, don't hit her," when I was probably 4 or 5.
What?
"Dad, don't hit her."
You weren't told. You have a recollection of that.
And this I'm sharing with you guys first. I've shared no one with no one else. Whoever's listening, it's the first time I'm sharing it with you. I didn't even share it with family or friends.
Sure.
And I remember I didn't understand what that divorce existed.
Mm.
And I said to my mom, I said, "Mom, when is Jesus coming to fetch him?"
No.
I was 5 years old. "When is Jesus coming to
fetch him?" And obviously you remember all of that.
I remember that because it's trauma. And so when I went to school, I didn't know it was secondary trauma, and I was a slow learner.
No.
Yes.
You were a slow learner.
Slow learner. The teachers didn't think that I would ever get to university.
Let alone being a doctor of philosophy.
Absolutely. And psychology.
And psychology.
Yes. And I thought that I was stupid because everybody called me stupid and simple and you'll get nowhere. That is family members. My mom was amazing. Mm. So I didn't even think that. Can you see that I was already robbed as a child of my destiny?
Mm.
Is in the home. And I think that
was mommy a believer?
Mommy wasn't a believer.
Oh.
Well, she believed in God and went to a nominal church.
Okay.
I mean, I think with what she did well because she set a foundation for more.
And the
so
fact
she
that
went
you,
to church every Sunday.
And the fact that you could say, "When is Jesus coming to take him?"
Yes.
Means you had a certain foundation
some
yourself.
Foundation, yes.
Mm.
Yes, and I think then eventually my mom left him because he wanted to harm my brother. His hand was around his neck. So my brother lives in Cape Town, so he won't hear this. I don't want to be him.
Yeah.
So when my dad had his hands around my brother's neck, that's what my mom realized. Look, you've started with me and you'll end with me.
Yeah. And it doesn't go through to my
and
children.
And then she left.
Sure.
And she left. And ever since that, it was hard because she couldn't, you know, raise 3 kids. And that's another long story.
Yeah.
I'll probably write a book one day about my life. And I became a doctor, and how I realized that, you know, I'm able to do this. I'm able to study. I didn't know. When I was in matric, I felt...
Were you still an average child by then?
Low average. Sure. Just about make it. Almost, I think they were even... what do they call it?
Condone. No, Dr. Marilyn.
Yes, I think they were. Because my mom was always happy when I passed. You know, moms are not happy when it's 75%.
Yes. Ooh, for you, it was as long as you've passed.
No, mom was happy when she seemed so passed. It doesn't matter what the percentage was. bless her. And yes, I must say that my father, and I want to speak to the men, my father wasn't able to provide for us and pay my maintenance and stuff. But I loved him. I loved him so much because my mom always used to say, my mom never spoke bad about him. And that's I want the women to know. My mom never spoke bad about him. That's how we never lived. In unforgiveness.
And though you had that picture of his abuse, but he was a different man as your dad.
Yes. Sure. And when he was older, when I got married, he came to live with me because he didn't have a place to live. You know, those years they used to work on in the building industry, and they used to get this packets, like paper packets, brown paper packets, and they used to put their money.
Their salary.
Their like wages.
Oh.
And every week, my dad was living with me and I was an adult. And he used to bring his wages closed with fruit and a chocolate.
Oh.
It was his time. And he gave his heart to the Lord.
Wow.
During that time when he was living with us.
Mm.
So I think, you know, I knew that my dad was a good dad. Despite the fact that
he might have been a terrible husband,
and also he wasn't able to provide. He was lousy with money. He had friends. He was never home. But I loved him, and I think Jesus gave me that love for him. You know,
yeah, I understand.
Just no matter what people said, I just loved him, and I'm so glad I loved him. And that's my mom's reason. My mom was the cause of me loving him.
Wow,
she's an amazing mother.
She didn't want you involved in her issues.
I could have lived in unforgiveness.
Yep.
Up until today. I could have hated him for ruining my childhood, for me having to start later in life with education because of that, not having money, not having food, struggling and living with family members. But I didn't, because my mom always said to me, and I don't find another mom like that. She's one of the unique women. She said to me, Marilyn, he didn't have parents.
So he had no point of reference himself.
So love him. She still said after leaving him, love him. That was my gift to my mom. She wasn't rich to give me the best education. I mean, I went to government school. She wasn't rich. She couldn't give me much, but she taught me how to love the unlovable. She taught me how to forgive. That is the biggest gift she can give me. And I know there's a lot of mothers that left their husbands.
Yeah.
But she surpasses them all.
You know, I'm teary, Dr. Marilyn, because you made mention of the fact that he had no point of reference. I grew up very angry at my dad. My parents are still married, by the way. And I could never understand. I remember... envying children who were of single parents because I had this ugly picture of marriage within it, you know, and I think I remember repeatedly asking my pastor as a young adult to say, how do you forgive somebody who is still hurting you in the whole process? You feel he's not responsible, he's not stepping up. And I tell you, my healing came the day I remember there was a conflict in the home. And we sat for a meeting, and my dad's siblings excused him.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, our dad was like this, and my mom never exposed him. And this was to blame my mom, because they felt my mom was exposing him. Little did they know that we were now old enough to see that my mom had never exposed him, not one day. If anything, she had always protected him. But now we were adults, and we were able to see him for
Absolutely.
Who he was.
Demi could see, yes.
And that haunted me to a point. One day I remember sitting in a meeting with a cousin of mine relaying to her these injustices. And I said to her, but I'm getting to a calmer state because now I understand that he had no examples in his life. And I feel now I'm expecting him to be a good dad when he never had a good dad. I'm not excusing him, but I've gained perspective and I now understand. So as you're speaking, I'm like, I'm teary because that's how I found peace.
Absolutely.
That's how I got to a place of peace.
And you know, my husband, the gift that God has given me is a very positive man.
Yeah.
Love the Lord, and always when I'm negative, remember when you have a low, chronically low self-esteem, your default is low. Your default is negative. And he would always say, of course you can't do this. No. Just, this is what God sees you. This is how God sees you. He would daily help me with my self-esteem.
Wow.
Now, and God's hooked me with that. Not that he hasn't hooked me with another doctor or an ambitious businessman.
Yeah.
I didn't need that. For me to develop and love myself and love others, I had a husband that loved me so much, that taught me how to be loved.
Sure.
And always put me first. I'm still number one. I come first and he comes first. And always, even today or the next day, you'll still say, no, Madeline, don't be negative. God's got you.
Yeah,
God's got you.
Yeah.
God's got you. I know the books are not selling, but God's got you.
You know how that sounds.
The books are selling, but it's not the way you want it.
Of course.
And you become despondent and he says, God's got you.
God's got you. You're his egg. There's a term in the streets where they say, you are a Grootman's egg. You are his his prized possession.
So yes, I'm thankful to God for my husband. Look, he makes me upset. Obviously, we all get
in marriage.
But I can see God's purpose was to provide healing and restoration in me in the way that he did it.
Wow. I understand that you got married at the age of 23.
Yes.
And so, but when did you start your psychology degree?
So that's a long story. Do we have time for
that? No, we don't, because I wanted to get to the book.
But
you then pursued your education after marriage.
So I must tell you that. Remember, I lived in a community in a colored township where I was known to be stupid, where I was known to be unsuccessful. And God took me out there and took me to a place, that time, Polokwane.
Oh.
And I had black friends and I lived in Sashego.
Oh. Sashego is where Malema's from.
Wherever.
I understand, yes.
But I stayed with them. And in Polokwane, the African people all study. They're 3 degrees, 2 degrees. Mm. It's amazing how God takes me to a colored community and puts me in a black community where people study. Mm. And they kept on saying, Madeline, why are you not studying? No, of course you can study.
Wow. Everybody, and you're thinking, who? Stupid me.
And I said, no, of course you can. And they don't know my background. And they don't know where I'm coming from. And that was in Petersburg, Polokwane, when I registered my first year. And when I wrote my first
paper. And you were married already by then?
I was married then. I was in Polokwane. Went for some business opportunity, which also failed. That's another story. when I wrote my first exam, I cried and I said, God, I can actually write this exam.
Wow.
I am in a university.
Me. Sure.
And I defied all
odds,
negative prophecies and talks over my life. And excelled because God was with me.
Wow.
Like he was with Joseph.
Come on.
And God was with me.
Wow.
And he's still with me.
Sure.
Okay, so there's a lot to talk about.
Definitely.
And some of the things, some of my challenges, some of our marriage challenges and our difficulties, I put in the marriage book for couples to know it's normal.
It's normal.
It's normal to have
challenges.
These
are just phases.
It's normal.
Yeah.
It's not the end of a marriage. We have a terrible, challenging, traumatic incident in your marriage.
So these experiences then propelled you to say, hey, I want to understand the human mind. I want to be a psychologist.
I was interested in harm. I was harmed.
Oh.
by behavior.
Okay.
And so that always attracted me, the way a mom treats a child. I can be anywhere.
Mm.
Or the way a father treats a child. I watch behavior and how they're harming.
Okay.
And that is when I wanted to find out more about human behavior and how to help and how to heal.
Wow. And then
so my PhD is about marriage, and I did research on marriage.
That's where I want us to
on
go.
On couples.
Okay.
And that was my PhD, and I wrote the book on research on what I believe couples need and how they can work. So these days, most children don't have role models.
Mm.
And so my book, Build to Last, is an architectural plan. It's from the beginning, building, 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 building. If you don't know how, the book will guide you right. It's not mixed up with all kinds of stuff. It's foundational.
Mm.
So I want to start by saying, you know, in Matthew it says, a household divided against itself will not stand.
Mm.
And that is, and the other one is, unless the Lord builds the house.
Those that build it.
Builder labors in vain.
Mm.
And that is why my book is symbolic
of a house. I saw that house structure thing on the book. I was like, what is this about?
Yes, it's symbolic of a house.
Mm.
And it's a blueprint, and it's your own architectural blueprint, because look, your marriage is going to be different to mine.
Exactly.
No, you come from a different background, different city, different culture,
yeah.
different religion.
Yep. Yep.
And so it's your architecture is going to be different than mine.
Mm.
And we as couples need to understand we can't mimic other couples.
Exactly.
We're going to get...
No matter how their picture looks.
Yes.
It's not going to be the same. We're never going to... I can't direct my husband to Dr. Marilyn's marriage and say, hey, look at how they're living. It's not going to be the same.
You have to have your own architectural blueprint.
Mm.
And we'll take you right through to the end of the book. And then there is a workbook.
Okay.
So you as a couple will work through the whole part of the house. And I'll explain the house to you now.
Okay.
So instead of saying, we've got, you have no empathy. You know, you are heartless. You can say, you know, babe, I think cementing the house is what we still need to work on. Because cementing the marriage is about empathy.
Mm.
I'll get there. You see, so you can know which part of your marriage you still
has
need to
an
work
issue.
On. And it's a continuous thing. You go back and you go back and you work on it. So just to start, I'm going to give, because you know we don't have much time yet. Because
you
need to be out by 6.
Yes.
So the first part of the house is preparation to build.
Foundation, basically.
Or restore. So it's not even the foundation.
Oh.
It's the defining.
Mm.
Defining your marriage.
Mm.
So it's either religious, individualistic, or collectivistic.
Right.
So religious is obviously both couples. Both couples together are Christians, and that the Bible and what the Bible says is key to them in their marriage.
That's our book of rules.
That's our solution,
right?
Then you get a different couple where you'll find one is individualistic and one is collectivistic. So individualistic is like a single person. I am married, but I'm single. I'm acting single. I'm with my guys on a Friday. But then I sleep late on a Saturday, and then I go and wash the car in the afternoon. I don't spend time with my family. I'm single. Oh, do whatever you need to do with the kids.
Just married in the books.
Yeah, and pay what you need to pay. What do you need from me? Oh, you need 5,000. Okay, there's the 5,000. Just do what you need to do.
Mm.
No time for the wife and no time
to service the marriage.
For the family. Mm. That's individualistic. So my father was individualistic.
Mm.
My mom was collectivistic.
Okay.
So collectivistic means we sacrifice for the greater good of the family.
Okay.
That is what culture does as well.
Yeah.
Culture is one person needs to sacrifice for the greater good of the family.
Mm-hmm.
So collectivistic is you find most often, and please guys, don't say that I am gender biased, please.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say
most
female,
commonly.
But most commonly it is females that's collectivistic because they have to take care of everything and the job and make sure there's money for the school fees.
Mm-hmm.
And some men, not all men, Christian men or not, right?
Yes.
Individualistic is we are in a marriage, but we're not a couple.
Sure.
The family thinks we're married. It's on paper.
Mm.
But he's single. He does his thing. He doesn't listen
his
to
way.
Her. He doesn't want to get her opinion. This is what I say. So it also, the individualistic also blends into the traditional. The traditional way some people feel that the head of the home has the last say. The head of the home, I'm the head of the home. I've heard it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the head of the home and I will have the last say. But I actually want to tell the men, there is a surprise waiting for you when you appear before God.
Sure.
Because he's not going to be interested in who chose the car or the couch or the paint.
Yeah, yeah.
No. He's going to ask you first. The wife will be there. But he's going to ask you first. Did you lead your family spiritually?
How did you lead it?
Did you lead your family spiritually? All of them.
Mm.
The whole family with your wife.
Mm.
How is she made? How is she doing spiritually? The second question is, they have a purpose.
Okay.
Were you as a husband able to
help fulfill the purpose?
Help fulfill the purpose. Help sure. God to fulfill the purpose.
Sure.
Now the man says, oh, you know, God, you know, I was tied up with my job.
Excuses.
And all that. And then the Lord says, but I gave you a helpmeet.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, I heard that, hey? Oh, yes.
I knew she was a helpmeet. I just didn't know how to.
I didn't know. But what does helpmeet mean? It means let us discuss.
Mm.
It's not I'm the head of the home and I'm going to tell you what to do.
Mm.
It's let us discuss what is in the best interest of the family.
Mm.
My child has a learning disability. We cannot place him or her in a private school.
Mm.
It's going to harm the child academically.
Mm.
Because the standard is very high in a private school.
Yeah.
So let's take the child maybe to a moderate, semi-private school, but not a private school. All these assignments have to be done. I mean, I had, when I worked with kids before, the child was in grade one. I said, why don't you want to go to school? Too much homework, I'm telling you.
Aww.
Grade one. Too much homework, I don't play.
And the child needs to play at some point.
Yes, I don't work with children anymore. It's not couple therapy. Yes.
Mm.
And so children need to develop in play. I'm not going to talk about children anymore. But yeah. That is what the wife and the husband will make decisions on, not what he does on his own.
Mm.
For the purpose of what God wants and also
the benefit of this benefit. Family.
So my husband worked with the purpose of God for me to be where I am today.
Mm.
So they'll get 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
I don't know about the others, but yes.
Dr. Mary, he helped God. Humor.
He helped God.
Yeah.
The other, so that is the defining of your relationship.
Mm.
And then the next will be your roles. Obviously, we'll know whether it's traditional roles, whether, you know, some men likes cooking these days.
Yep.
They like, you know, before it was the women's role.
Mm.
And I think a lot more women want men to help in the house. And it's very tough when you're a traditional man.
Yep.
And that needs to be defined even before you get married.
Yes.
So the book is even good for single couples that needs to know about marriage. You don't have to date to read the book because you
and
get
it's gonna help
you get your channel. License. Mm. You get your car's license, right?
Driver's before license, you get the car.
And you don't even have a car. So read a book and find out about marriage and see if you are dating, is this person ready for marriage? Will this person be able to communicate in the way that the book is describing?
Mm.
If you are so self-centered, then you're not ready.
And it's going to help you to look forth.
Yes.
So that you don't get in blindly.
Yes. If it's all about me, and we'll tell you how to communicate. And if you're not getting that correct, you know the person's not ready.
Yep.
Because conflict causes exhaustion.
Okay.
And then they separate. It's just too exhausting.
True.
And it can lead to even depression. Conflict every day is very tiring in couples. And a lot of them are leaving and separating because they cannot handle the conflict and they need a safe place and a quiet place.
Yeah. They need a sense of
it's
peace.
It's not fighting a safe
every day,
place to go to.
Yeah.
That's part one. Part two is the foundation. And obviously spirituality is the key.
Mm.
Right? If the Lord doesn't build your house.
You're building in vain.
You're building in vain. Mm. Right? That's one of it. And then I've also added the psychological part. So the whole book is not spiritual. It's the part that's needed is the foundation. There you'll find some things that I'm talking about under the foundation. Here and there you'll have some Christian and cultural, because I worked 10 years in a township, so there'll be some cultural exercises on how important culture is in a marriage.
Mm. So this book is pretty much like getting yourself a session and working through it, getting a guide and you know, discovering where are we within this.
So yes, the foundation is the spiritual side, and I've also got the cognitive side, because if your beliefs, your thoughts affect your emotions and behavior. Mm-hmm. If I believe marriages don't last, but we get married, isn't it?
Yeah.
In my marriage, unconsciously, I am going to look for problems to prove marriage don't work. I will have irrational beliefs. So even I might have the most faithful husband, but if I believe all men have affairs, I'm going to accuse him why he's late 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it exhausts the guy. Mm. And then he's so exhausted of all the accusations that he decides, I'm going to leave. Gotcha. I knew in her mind, happy. I knew marriages don't last.
Yeah, because that's not the attitude you were.
Not realizing you have shot yourself in the foot by continuously
looking,
and your irrational beliefs about men are unfaithful, all men are unfaithful. And so that is also, so we also do help how to reframe your irrational beliefs about marriage and to minimize conflict. Because that creates conflict.
Yeah.
So I have to rush now. Eh?
Yeah.
I've got a few minutes left.
Yeah, we've got about 5 minutes.
Hey, you're joking. Part three is cementing the relationship. Mm-hmm. And so it's about respect, empathy, vulnerability. Men always complain. The first thing men complain with if they go to sessions is no respect. Guys, I just want to share with you.
What is that
if
about?
If you have harmed your wife, if she's wounded and you haven't if you haven't sorted or assisted with the healing of her wounds, she won't show respect. She's not able to show love because you've wounded her.
Mm.
And this daily criticizing, nobody knows that. Daily criticizing a woman, you're wounding her daily.
Mm.
And she's not good. She's going to just make yourself your own coffee. But I asked you so beautifully, my darling. I said, just make this pain and trauma, if it's not dealt with, disrespect.
Mm.
It comes across as disrespect. Let's say she's not disrespectful, but she comes across disrespectful.
Mm.
Okay, so empathy. You know, I think a lot of people know about empathy and vulnerability, how important vulnerability is. When I share you my secret, my best friend then be closer. Isn't it?
Yeah.
She's got my secret and I've got her secret. So vulnerability is important. And I remember that was such an important, vulnerability was such an important issue when we did the workshop with couples. They were married for 20 years and the woman, he was sharing his childhood, like I shared it today.
Mm.
And she didn't know that he went through such a hard childhood.
Because he had never opened up about
that.
Yes,
and I had to obviously debrief them lunchtime as a psychologist, and I phoned late in the day. She said, madam, we have never been as close as we are today for the 20 years.
And that's built by that moment of vulnerability.
Vulnerability.
Imagine 20 years later.
20 years later. Then part four. Repair the cracks in the walls of your house. I said cementing the wall foundation, cementing the wall, the cracks in the wall, repairing the cracks of your walls. Remember those metaphorical expressions, driving me up the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Walls have ears.
Uh-huh.
Talking to a brick wall.
Yes.
Our backs against all conflict and communication. Mm. So this is about communication. There are two techniques that I share. The one is emotion focused. When your wife wants, sometimes husbands want to solve problems. Mm. Ask her, is this emotional support,
mm-hmm.
or is it a problem solving issue? If it's emotional support, she'll get a speaker listener. I have developed a communication technique called the coffee time technique. And it has 6 principles. And at the last 6th one, you are able to find a resolution. When you go it step by step, you won't have conflict.
Mm.
It avoids conflict completely. Because you start off first with a compliment.
Is it included in the book?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the coffee time, you start off with a compliment. Because I know I'm upset about you came home 12 o'clock last night, mm-hmm. but there's something good about him. And you compliment that before you start.
Just to look out for
with
that.
With your complaint. That already mm-hmm. lowers the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
That makes you a little bit more open. More open.
And let's be realistic. Men love their ego stroked as well. You know, you've just given him that, you know, moment of him feeling good about himself.
Absolutely. That's part four. And I'm just mentioning small points, okay? Mm. It's not the full book. Part five is obviously the windows. Cleaning your windows.
Mm-hmm.
And the windows, when you look through it, it's your vision.
Yeah.
Building a vision of your family. How to form a vision. How to stick to the vision.
Mm-hmm.
And then remember, you can't have a vision board without a financial vision.
Yeah. Yeah.
So lots of people have these unrealistic visions, but they're not managing their finances.
And we're not going to have the conversation.
And they're not in line with their finances. They're not on the same page.
Mm.
He likes spending or she likes spending immediately all the money she wants to save.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the no, let's have fun. No, I want to move out of this apartment. I want a house. Yes, we can always get a house. I want to go on holiday to Mauritius.
Mm.
And that's a conflict, continuous conflict. I want to spend my money on friends.
Mm.
No, I want to save. And so you never, ever reach your vision. And a couple that works on their goals, their short-term and long-term goals, they promote teamwork
mm-hmm.
and longevity.
Yeah.
Because they have 2 years. You have 3 years.
Mm.
You have 5 years. And you have your goals. And when you get to 5 years, you start again. And that's how you create longevity. And you work together as a team.
Sure.
As a family and also your individual goals.
Mm.
So you don't just have couple goals, but he must be able to help her with her individual goals.
Mm.
That God has purpose for her.
Mm.
And, you know, and she needs to help him.
Sure.
And sit back when you need to let someone else grow.
Mm.
Don't just you want to grow and grow and grow. Sit back and allow the next one to grow. Then you stop and then you grow. And that is how
must be interchangeable.
You work interchangeable. And that's how you work on your vision together.
Mm.
Right? Varnishing the doors. Now we're at the doors of the house.
Yes.
And then obviously it's how we examine our external negativity affects personal and marital well-being. A lot of the marriages can talk about that. External family, friends, his friends, that's, you know, negatively influencing him.
Siblings,
her friends.
Mm.
And then also the importance of establishing healthy boundaries without harming others.
Yeah.
Just how to establish your boundaries.
Mm.
Part seven is tiling the stairs.
Okay.
Tiling the stairs. You have the four stages of intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lack of intimacy in the marriage. And then you have the five stages of marriage.
Oh.
So you can gauge which stage of intimacy are we at and gauge in your marriage.
Mm.
The stages of love. Do you mind me reading something quickly out of the book?
Not a problem.
So, you know, the stages of love, you have obviously your infatuation.
Yes.
And love, and then and the second stage is becoming a couple, right? Okay, so now we're a couple, and we're having a child. Some people's marriages after a child
changes.
Some is positive. Some say, you know, we're now more closer, and some marriages
drift further apart
after a baby. So these are the different stages, and they're interchangeable, and they're not cast in stone.
Mm.
But the one that stood out for me was the stage of disillusionment. That is when everybody gets divorced.
Mm.
That's because now you think that it's the end of our marriage. It's actually the stage three. Then there's a stage four, right? And and the stage four talks about building your real love and life together.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a couple, your power of two changing the world.
Mm.
So you pass disillusionment, and most couples are stuck here. So I'm going to try and read quickly.
Okay.
Disillusionment.
Go ahead.
So step three is disillusionment. The third stage is often a shocking and painful reality check for couples. Many marriages fail during this stage because couples assume the relationship is doomed when in fact the stage is a natural part of the process. This is a period of emotional disconnection where partners may feel like strangers to one another. Small annoyances grow into significant irritations, and both partners may feel unloved. and uncared for. During disillusionment, couples often withdraw emotionally or physically. Some might bury themselves in work or family obligations to escape the discomfort, but dissatisfaction continues to build. This stage can manifest as frequent conflict, anger, and frustration, leaving both partners feeling trapped. While some couples might separate or divorce during this stage, others may merely exist together without intimacy or connection. Prolonged exposure to this stage can lead to physical, emotional illness such as depression, as partners grieve the loss of the love they once shared. The silver lining of this stage is that it allows couples to let go of their illusions and unrealistic expectations. It provides an opportunity to negotiate the realities of the relationship and uncover unresolved wounds from past experiences.
Sure.
And sometimes you can revisit the stage, you know, until you get to the fourth stage. But yes, it is a very difficult stage. I've been through stage three many times.
Sure.
But knowing it's a stage.
Yeah.
And that is when you uncover this person. And I remember calling my mom and saying, "Mom, why didn't you tell me he's such a terrible man? I married a terrible man. Why didn't you tell me?" It is when you become disillusioned and you see the realities and you see his flaws.
Yeah.
But you don't focus on the strengths. That is when you focus on the strengths. The wounds comes, your childhood wounds comes, your stage, your wounds, the wounds he caused, all comes together in the stage.
Yeah.
And that's the time when you need to find your personal healing, couple healing, and push through.
Yeah. Sure.
Because children are also harmed.
In the process.
In the process. They are harmed. Even the adults, I mean, I say adults as well. And they will tell me about the harm divorces cause and the fighting and the conflict.
Sure.
And if we can use this architectural map, use the workbook and build your own architectural map, because the work guides you to your own unique blueprint.
Dr. Marilyn, I'm looking at the time. It's literally 6 o'clock.
I didn't cover the roof, but that's fine. They can read the part.
How do we get our hands on the book?
You can go to marilynsaunders.co.za and the book will be online. You can order.
Any social media pages and platforms?
It will be. That's the social media platform.
Okay.
And my other page will be connected to that. Once you've bought a workbook, then I'll do the online talks for 200 rand.
Wow.
After the workbook.
Wow.
That's out of the book. So that you can then be guided further.
Wow. Dr. Marilyn, thank you so much.
Thank
and God
for
bless
this
for doing the work of the Lord, because marriages are truly the work of the Lord. Ultimately, we model what we are to Christ, the bride of Christ. And so we need to depict marriage in a beautiful, light.
The way Christ purposed and wanted.
Wow. Thanks and God bless.
God bless. Thank you. Bye-bye, viewers. Bye, listeners.
Hear the word and renew your life on 657 AM.
Do you need prayer? WhatsApp your name and your prayer request to 082-657-2729. And our care center will gladly contact you to pray for you.
Tune in to Radio Pulpit on 657 AM for reliable Christian talk radio at its best. Find your daily dose of Christ-centered motivation and encouragement on Radio Pulpit 657. Download our app now. Tune in to radiopulpit.co.za or find us on DSTV Audio 882 and OpenView 607. Radio Pulpit, your daily companion for more than 40 years, brings a relevant moral alternative to 400,000 listeners in a variety of South African languages. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and download our podcasts today.
You and 657 AM and Life, a winning team on the road to eternity.